Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the skillful art of manipulation. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present The Silent Partnership, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, Seeds of Deceit. They say you should never mix business with friendship. I used to scoff at that advice, convinced that trust and loyalty could thrive in the cutthroat world of commerce. But now, sitting at my desk and staring at the ornate nameplate that reads Ethan Grayson Co-Founder, I realize how naive I was. My partner, Caleb Moore, and I built this empire from scratch, late nights, endless coffee, and a shared dream of conquering the market. But somewhere along the way, the dream twisted into something darker. It started small, as these things often do. A missed meeting here, an unexplained expense there. Caleb had always been the charming one, the face of our company. He knew how to work a room, his easy smile and sharp suits disarming even the toughest investors. I, on the other hand, was the numbers guy, the quiet architect behind our success. Together, we were unstoppable. At least, that's what I used to believe. The first crack appeared 6 months ago. I was going over our quarterly reports late one night when I noticed a discrepancy in our accounts. It wasn't glaring, just a few $1,000s funneled into a consulting fee that hadn't been authorized. At first, I thought it was a mistake. After all, Caleb and I had an unspoken agreement to run every major expense past each other. But when I brought it up the next morning, he waved it off with his signature charm. Oh, that? Just a little extra incentive for one of our vendors. Trust me, Ethan, it's nothing to worry about. His smile didn't quite reach his eyes. I should have pressed him then, demanded an explanation. But I didn't. Instead, I let it slide, convincing myself that Caleb knew what he was doing. That was my first mistake. Weeks turned into months, and the discrepancies became harder to ignore. Caleb started taking more trips, networking opportunities, he called them, and leaving me to manage the day-to-day operations. The charm that once made him an asset now felt like a weapon, one he wielded with precision to keep me off balance. I began to notice other things, too. The way he avoided direct eye contact during meetings, the whispered phone calls behind closed doors. Something was off, and my gut told me it wasn't just paranoia. I started digging, combing through our financial records, and piecing together a puzzle I wasn't sure I wanted to solve. The consulting fees had ballooned into tens of thousands of dollars, all routed to a shell company with no discernible purpose. I traced the transactions as far as I could, but they led to dead ends and dummy accounts. Caleb was hiding something, and I was determined to find out what. Late one night, as the city's skyline twinkled outside my office window, I made a decision that would change everything. I hired a private investigator. Her name was Natalie Pierce, a no-nonsense professional with a reputation for uncovering the truth, no matter how deeply it was buried. When we met in a dimly lit coffee shop downtown, I could feel her sizing me up, her piercing green eyes scanning for weaknesses. "So, what exactly are you hoping to find?" she asked, her voice calm but direct. I hesitated, the weight of my suspicions pressing down on me. "I need to know if my partner is betraying me," I finally said. "And if he is, I need proof." Natalie didn't blink. "Betrayal comes in many forms. What are you prepared to do if I find something?" The question caught me off guard. I hadn't thought that far ahead. All I knew was that I couldn't sit back and let Caleb jeopardize everything we'd built. "Just find the truth," I said. "I'll figure out the rest." Over the next few weeks, Natalie kept me updated on her progress. She was methodical, uncovering a trail of breadcrumbs that painted a picture of Caleb I barely recognized. He wasn't just skimming money, he was building something of his own. A rival company, funded by our hard-earned profits. The audacity of it made my blood boil. But what stung the most was the realization that Caleb had been playing me for a fool all along. I tried to confront him once, but the words caught in my throat. Caleb had a way of disarming people, twisting conversations until you doubted your own intentions. Instead, I played along, pretending everything was fine while I plotted my next move. I started documenting everything, emails, financial records, even our casual conversations. If Caleb wanted a war, I was going to make damn sure I had the ammunition to win. But as the weeks dragged on, I began to notice something unsettling. Natalie's updates became less frequent, her once detailed reports now vague and incomplete. When I pressed her for answers, she assured me she was following a lead, but I couldn't shake the feeling that something was off. It was as if the hunter had become the hunted, and I was caught in the crossfire of a game I didn't fully understand. One evening, as I sat in my office reviewing yet another set of damning financial records, my phone buzzed with a message from Natalie. "We need to talk. Urgent." My pulse quickened as I grabbed my coat and headed for the door. The city streets felt colder than usual, the wind biting at my skin as I made my way to the designated meeting spot. When I arrived, Natalie was already there, her expression unreadable. "What's going on?" I asked, sliding into the booth across from her. She leaned in, her voice barely above a whisper. "Your partner isn't the only one with secrets." The words hit me like a punch to the gut. For a moment, I couldn't speak, the weight of her revelation stealing the air from my lungs. "What do you mean?" I finally managed. Natalie hesitated, her eyes darting around the room as if searching for unseen threats. "I've uncovered something, bigger than I expected. Caleb's betrayal is just the tip of the iceberg." Before I could press her for details, she slid a folder across the table. Inside were photos, documents, and a handwritten note that made my stomach churn. The note was addressed to me, but it wasn't in Caleb's handwriting. Someone else was pulling the strings, and I had a sinking feeling that I was about to learn just how deep the rabbit hole went. As I left the coffee shop that night, the folder clutched tightly in my hands. I couldn't shake the feeling that I was being watched. The shadows seemed darker, the city's familiar sounds now tinged with menace. For the first time in my life, I felt truly vulnerable, a pawn in a game I barely understood. And yet, a part of me couldn't help but feel exhilarated. If Caleb thought he could outmaneuver me, he was in for a rude awakening. I wasn't just fighting to save our business. I was fighting to prove that I wasn't the naive fool he'd taken me for. The game was on, and I was ready to play. Chapter 2, The First Betrayal. When you trust someone implicitly, their betrayal feels like a knife twisted between your ribs. I never thought I'd feel that kind of pain, especially from Caleb. He was my partner, my friend, or so I thought. But as Natalie's discoveries began to pile up, I realized that trust is often the first casualty in the war for power. I spent days poring over the contents of the folder Natalie had given me. It was a treasure trove of deceit, financial records, emails, even photographs of Caleb meeting with a rival investor, the same investor who had tried to poach our clients months earlier. Each new piece of evidence felt like a hammer blow, shattering the illusion I'd clung to for so long. Caleb wasn't just skimming money. He was actively plotting to undermine me, to dismantle everything we'd built together. But the most damning revelation came in the form of a grainy photo tucked into the back of the folder. It showed Caleb sitting in a dimly lit restaurant, his arm draped casually around a woman who was most definitely not his wife. Her face was partially obscured, but her body language was clear. This wasn't just a business meeting. Caleb was cheating on Emma, the woman who had stood by his side through thick and thin. And if he could betray her, what chance did I stand? I should have confronted him then and there, but I hesitated. Caleb was a master manipulator, capable of twisting any situation to his advantage. If I didn't approach this carefully, he'd find a way to turn the tables on me, to make me doubt my own sanity. So, I bided my time, playing the loyal partner while I plotted my next move. One evening, as the office emptied out and the hum of fluorescent lights filled the silence, I decided to test the waters. Caleb was still in his office, his door slightly ajar. I could see him leaning back in his chair, a glass of whiskey in one hand and his phone in the other. He was laughing at something, his voice low and conspiratorial. For a moment, I considered barging in, demanding answers. But I knew better. Confrontation would only tip him off. Instead, I knocked lightly on the doorframe. "Got a minute?" I asked, keeping my tone casual. He looked up, his smile fading ever so slightly. "Ethan, what's up?" I stepped inside, closing the door behind me. "I've been going over the financials," I began, carefully watching his reaction. "There are some irregularities I can't quite explain." Caleb's expression didn't falter, but I noticed a flicker of something in his eyes, annoyance, maybe even fear. "Irregularities?" he repeated, his tone light. "Come on, Ethan, You know how these things go. A few rounding errors, a late invoice or two. Nothing to lose sleep over. I nodded, pretending to accept his explanation. You're probably right. Still, I'd feel better if we went over it together. Just to be safe. Caleb's smile returned, but it didn't reach his eyes. Of course, he said, raising his glass in a mock toast. Anything for my partner. As I left his office, I couldn't shake the feeling that I'd just danced with the devil. Caleb was playing a dangerous game, and I was determined to beat him at it. But to do that, I needed more than just evidence. I needed leverage. Over the next few weeks, I became a ghost in my own company, silently observing and gathering intel. Caleb's behavior grew increasingly erratic. He'd disappear for hours at a time, leaving cryptic notes about important meetings. When he was in the office, he spent most of his time on the phone, his voice low and urgent. The man who once exuded confidence now seemed perpetually on edge, as if the walls were closing in around him. And then there was Emma. She'd always been a fixture at our company events, her warm smile and easy laughter a stark contrast to Caleb's calculated charm. But lately, she'd been conspicuously absent. When I asked Caleb about it, he shrugged it off, claiming she was busy with her own work. But the truth was written all over his face. Their marriage was crumbling, and I couldn't help but wonder if I had a part to play in that. My suspicions were confirmed one evening when I ran into Emma at a charity gala. She looked tired, her usually impeccable makeup failing to hide the dark circles under her eyes. When she saw me, she forced a smile, but it didn't last long. "Ethan," she said, her voice tinged with sadness. "It's been a while." I nodded, unsure of what to say. "You've been missed around the office. Everything okay?" She hesitated, glancing over her shoulder as if checking for someone. "Caleb's been busy," she said finally. "We've both been busy." It was a lie, but I didn't press her. Instead, I offered her a drink and steered the conversation toward safer topics. But as the night wore on, I couldn't shake the feeling that Emma knew more than she was letting on. And if she did, she could be the key to unraveling Caleb's web of deceit. By the time I got home that night, my mind was racing. I needed to find a way to get Emma on my side, to turn her against Caleb without tipping my hand. It wouldn't be easy. Emma was loyal to a fault, and I knew she'd defend Caleb until she had undeniable proof of his betrayal. But if anyone could provide that proof, it was Natalie. I called her the next morning, laying out my plan. "Emma's the linchpin," I said. "If we can get her to see Caleb for who he really is, we'll have the leverage we need." Natalie was skeptical. "And what makes you think she'll trust you?" she asked. "You're just as tied to Caleb as she is." She had a point, but I wasn't about to back down. "Then we'll give her something she can't ignore," I said. "Something that proves Caleb's been lying to her all along." Natalie agreed to help, but I could tell she had reservations. And honestly, so did I. Manipulating Emma felt wrong, like kicking someone who was already down. But this wasn't just about her. It was about exposing Caleb for the fraud he was, no matter the cost. The first betrayal had been Caleb's. But as I prepared to set my plan in motion, I couldn't shake the feeling that mine would be next. Chapter 3, The Unfolding Game. When the truth starts to bleed through the cracks, it's hard to stop the flood. By the time I woke up the next morning, my mind was a storm of strategies, contingencies, and paranoia. Caleb wasn't just a partner anymore, he was an enemy. And enemies, I'd come to realize, require more than confrontation. They require dismantling. It started with Emma. Natalie delivered on her promise to dig deeper, and the evidence she unearthed was enough to shake even the most loyal of wives. Pictures, text messages, and receipts for lavish gifts Caleb had purchased for his mistress painted a vivid picture of betrayal. But as damning as the evidence was, presenting it to Emma required finesse. The wrong approach could drive her further into Caleb's corner, and I couldn't afford that. I arranged to meet Emma under the guise of a casual lunch. The restaurant I chose was upscale but discreet, the kind of place where people spoke in hushed tones and the waitstaff knew when to disappear. When she arrived, I could see the exhaustion in her eyes, the faint lines of worry etched into her face. Caleb's lies were already wearing her down. "Ethan," she greeted me with a weak smile. "This is a surprise. I thought it might be nice to catch up," I said, gesturing for her to sit. "It feels like it's been ages since we've had a proper conversation." She sat down, her posture stiff, her guard up. "You're not wrong. Things have been hectic." We exchanged pleasantries at first, dancing around the real reason I'd invited her. I could tell she was suspicious, her responses guarded and calculated. Finally, as the waiter cleared our plates, I decided to make my move. "Emma," I began carefully, "there's something I need to talk to you about. Something important." Her eyes narrowed slightly. "This sounds serious." "It is." I leaned forward, lowering my voice. "I've been doing some digging, and I've come across things about Caleb that, well, I think you need to see for yourself." She stiffened, her expression a mix of curiosity and dread. "What kind of things?" I reached into my briefcase and pulled out the envelope Natalie had prepared. "Before I show you this, I need you to understand that I'm not doing this to hurt you. I care about you, Emma, but you deserve to know the truth." Her hands trembled slightly as she took the envelope. She hesitated for a moment before opening it, her eyes scanning the contents. With each passing second, her expression darkened, the color draining from her face. When she finally looked up, her eyes were filled with tears. "How long have you known?" she asked, her voice barely above a whisper. "Not long," I admitted. "But as soon as I found out, I knew I had to tell you. You deserve better than this, Emma." She stared at the photos for what felt like an eternity, her jaw clenched tightly. "He's been lying to me," she said finally, more to herself than to me. "All this time." I reached across the table, placing a hand on hers. "You don't have to face this alone. If there's anything you need, anything at all, I'm here for you." Her gaze met mine, and for a moment, I saw a flicker of something I hadn't expected, gratitude. "Thank you, Ethan. I don't know what I'd do without you." As I left the restaurant that day, I couldn't help but feel a pang of guilt. Manipulating Emma felt wrong, but it was a necessary evil. She was the key to Caleb's downfall, and I couldn't afford to let sentimentality get in the way. Meanwhile, Natalie continued her investigation, uncovering more pieces of Caleb's web of deceit. She found evidence of offshore accounts, shell companies, and backdoor deals that painted a picture of a man who'd been planning his escape for years. "Caleb wasn't just betraying me. He was siphoning the lifeblood of our company to fund his new venture. And the worst part, he wasn't acting alone." One evening, as I sat in my office reviewing Natalie's latest report, my phone buzzed with a message from her. "We need to meet. Urgent." I arrived at her office an hour later, my mind racing with possibilities. When she opened the door, her expression was grim. "What is it?" I asked, stepping inside. She closed the door behind me and handed me a stack of documents. "Caleb's been working with someone on the inside. Someone who's been feeding him information and covering his tracks." My stomach dropped as I flipped through the pages. The evidence was clear. Emails, bank transfers, and meeting notes that pointed to a mole within our ranks. But when I reached the final page, my blood turned to ice. The name listed as the informant was someone I'd trusted implicitly, someone I'd never suspected. "James," I muttered, barely able to process the betrayal. James was our CFO, a man who'd been with us since the beginning. He'd always been meticulous, loyal, and unwavering in his support. Or so I'd thought. Natalie's voice cut through my thoughts. "We need to act fast. If Caleb's planning to make a move, we need to be ahead of him." I nodded, my mind already racing with plans. "Start digging into James's accounts. I want to know every penny he's touched in the last 6 months." She hesitated. "And what about Emma?" The mention of her name brought a pang of guilt, but I pushed it aside. "Keep her in the loop. She's on our side now, and we're going to need her if we're going to take Caleb down." Natalie nodded, her expression resolute. "Got it. I'll update you as soon as I have something." As I left her office that night, I couldn't shake the feeling that the walls were closing in. Caleb was playing a dangerous game, and now James was in the mix. The stakes had never been higher, and the line between ally and enemy was growing increasingly blurred. But one thing was certain: I wasn't going to let Caleb win. Not without a fight. Chapter 4: A Web of Lies. Betrayal has a way of sinking into your bones, lingering long after the initial shock fades. As the days bled into nights, I found myself consumed by the revelations about Caleb and James. Their lies weren't just personal, they were systemic, threaded through every corner of the business we had built. And yet, the more I uncovered, the more I realized this wasn't just about them. It was about me. About how blind I had been to the game they'd been playing right under my nose. Emma, to her credit, had been more helpful than I anticipated. After our conversation at the restaurant, she'd thrown herself into the task of unraveling Caleb's secrets. She had access to his personal accounts, his schedule, even his private email. And while it was clear that digging through the mess of her husband's betrayal was taking a toll on her, she seemed determined to see it through. "He's been lying to me for years," she confided one evening as we sifted through a stack of receipts she'd smuggled out of their home. Every time he told me he was working late, every business trip. It was all a lie. Her voice cracked, and for a moment, I thought she might break down. But then she straightened her shoulders, a steely resolve hardening her features. He's not getting away with this, Ethan. Not after everything he's done. I nodded, her anger mirroring my own. We'll make sure he doesn't. But we need to be smart about this. Caleb's not going to go down without a fight. Emma's lips pressed into a thin line. Then we'll give him one. Meanwhile, Natalie was working overtime to piece together the puzzle of James's involvement. The evidence she uncovered painted a damning picture. Wire transfers to offshore accounts, encrypted emails exchanged with Caleb, even a shell company they'd created to funnel money out of our business. James, the man I'd trusted implicitly, had been a key player in Caleb's betrayal all along. He's been covering Caleb's tracks for years, Natalie explained during one of our late-night meetings. Every suspicious transaction, every missing dollar, James made it disappear. He's the reason Caleb's been able to stay one step ahead. I clenched my fists, the rage bubbling just beneath the surface. And what about now? Is he still working with Caleb? Natalie hesitated. It's hard to say. From what I can tell, their communication has slowed down recently. It's possible James is starting to have second thoughts. Or he's planning something even bigger, I muttered. She nodded grimly. Either way, we need to move quickly. If Caleb and James catch wind of what we're doing, they'll shut us down before we have a chance to act. I leaned back in my chair, my mind racing. We had the evidence, but we needed a plan. Something that would expose Caleb and James for the frauds they were while protecting the company from the fallout. And as much as I hated to admit it, we needed to play their game. To lie, manipulate, and backstab our way to the truth. The opportunity came sooner than I expected. Caleb had scheduled a board meeting to discuss a new investment opportunity, one that he claimed would take the company to the next level. I knew it was a front, a way for him to siphon even more money into his secret accounts. But it was also the perfect chance to expose him. The night before the meeting, Emma and I worked late, preparing a presentation that would blow Caleb's lies wide open. Natalie had provided us with detailed records of his offshore accounts, complete with timestamps and transaction IDs that linked directly to the company's funds. We also included evidence of James's involvement, ensuring that no one could deny the extent of their betrayal. By the time we finished, it was nearly dawn. Emma looked exhausted, her eyes red from lack of sleep. But there was a fire in her that hadn't been there before, a determination to see this through to the end. "We've got this," I assured her as she gathered her things. "By this time tomorrow, Caleb and James will be finished." She nodded, a small smile tugging at the corners of her lips. "Let's hope you're right." The boardroom was tense the next morning, the air thick with anticipation. Caleb, as always, was the picture of confidence, his tailored suit and easy smile masking the monster beneath. James sat beside him, his expression unreadable. The rest of the board members were blissfully unaware of the storm brewing just beneath the surface. As Caleb launched into his pitch, I watched the room carefully, noting every subtle shift in body language. He was good, I'd give him that. His words were smooth, his arguments persuasive. But no amount of charm could cover the cracks in his facade. When it was my turn to speak, I took a deep breath and stood, the weight of the evidence pressing heavily against my chest. "Before we move forward with Caleb's proposal," I began, "there are some concerns I need to address." Caleb's smile faltered slightly, but he quickly recovered. "Concerns?" he echoed, his tone light. "Ethan, if you had any questions, you could have come to me directly." "Oh, I did," I said, meeting his gaze. "But I didn't get any answers. So I decided to look elsewhere." I clicked a button on the remote, and the first slide of my presentation appeared on the screen. It showed a series of transactions, each one linked to Caleb's offshore accounts. Gasps rippled through the room as I walked the board through the evidence, piece by damning piece. Caleb's composure cracked as the presentation continued, his confident smile replaced by a scowl. James shifted uncomfortably in his seat, sweat beating on his forehead. By the time I finished, the room was silent, the weight of their betrayal hanging heavy in the air. "This is absurd," Caleb finally said, his voice shaking with barely contained rage. "You have no proof." "The proof is right here," I shot back, holding up a stack of documents. "And if that's not enough, I have copies ready to send to the authorities." Caleb's eyes narrowed, his jaw clenched tightly. For a moment, I thought he might lash out, but then he slumped back in his chair, defeated. James, on the other hand, made a feeble attempt to defend himself, but his words fell flat in the face of overwhelming evidence. The board erupted into chaos, voices overlapping as everyone tried to process what had just happened. But I didn't stick around to hear the fallout. I'd done what I came to do, and now it was up to the others to decide Caleb and James's fate. As I left the boardroom, Emma was waiting for me in the hallway. Her eyes were filled with a mixture of relief and gratitude. "You did it," she said, her voice barely above a whisper. "We did it," I corrected, offering her a small smile. But even as the victory settled over me, I couldn't shake the feeling that this was only the beginning. Caleb and James might be down, but they weren't out. And I knew better than to underestimate the lengths desperate men would go to when cornered. Chapter 5, The Blackmail Scheme. The silence in the boardroom after I exposed Caleb and James had been deafening, but the chaos that followed was far worse. Their reputations were in tatters, and I'd won the battle, at least for now. But as I walked out of that room with Emma by my side, a part of me couldn't shake the feeling that the war was far from over. Caleb wasn't the type to bow out gracefully, and James had proven himself to be just as conniving. I'd forced them into a corner, and desperate men do dangerous things. That night, I barely slept. Every sound outside my apartment made me jump. Every shadow seemed like a potential threat. I knew Caleb and James wouldn't take their downfall lying down. And I was right. The first blow came the next morning. Natalie called me, her voice sharp with urgency. "Ethan, we have a problem," she said. "What kind of problem?" I asked, already bracing myself. "Caleb and James are spinning the story," she explained. "They're claiming the evidence you presented was fabricated, that you've been embezzling funds and trying to pin it on them." I felt my stomach drop. "That's ridiculous. They can't prove that." "They don't need to prove it," Natalie said. "They just need to create enough doubt to make people question you. And from what I've heard, they're doing a damn good job." My mind raced as I tried to process what she was saying. Caleb and James were turning the tables, using the same tactics I'd used against them. And the worst part, it was working. "What do we do?" I asked, my voice tight with frustration. "We fight back," Natalie said. "But you need to be ready. This is going to get messy." Messy didn't even begin to describe it. Over the next few days, the situation spiraled out of control. Caleb and James launched a smear campaign against me, leaking false information to the media and planting stories about my supposed corruption. They even went as far as to hire private investigators to dig into my past, hoping to find anything they could use against me. At first, I thought I could weather the storm. But as the days turned into weeks, the pressure began to mount. Investors started pulling out, clients expressed their concerns, and the board's confidence in me began to waver. Caleb and James were winning, and I was running out of options. That's when I realized I needed to change the game. If Caleb and James wanted to play dirty, I'd beat them at their own game. But to do that, I needed leverage, something that would force them to back off and give me the upper hand. The opportunity came unexpectedly. One evening, as I was going through the files Natalie had gathered, I stumbled across a series of emails between Caleb and James. At first glance, they seemed innocuous, filled with the usual corporate jargon. But as I read through them more carefully, I noticed something odd. The emails referenced a Project Horizon, a venture I'd never heard of. I forwarded the emails to Natalie, asking her to dig deeper. Her response came the next morning. "Ethan, you're going to want to sit down for this," she said when she called. "What is it?" I asked, my heart pounding. "Project Horizon isn't just a business venture," she explained. "It's a money laundering scheme. Caleb and James have been funneling millions through shell companies, using the funds to finance their personal lifestyles. And the best part, I've got proof." She sent me a file containing bank statements, transaction records, and internal memos that outlined the entire operation. It was a smoking gun, the kind of evidence that could destroy Caleb and James for good. But as I stared at the file on my computer screen, a thought occurred to me. If I went public with this, it would be the end of Caleb and James. But it would also drag the company down with them. Was I willing to sacrifice everything to take them down? The answer came later that night, when I received an unexpected visitor. Emma showed up at my apartment, her face pale and her hands shaking. "What's wrong?" I asked, letting her inside. "It's Caleb," she said, her voice trembling. "He's threatening me." My blood ran cold. "What do you mean?" She reached into her bag and pulled out a letter. It was handwritten, the words scrawled in Caleb's unmistakable handwriting. "If you testify against me," it read, you'll regret it. You think you're safe with Ethan? Think again. I know things about him that would ruin him. Don't make me use them. I felt a surge of anger unlike anything I'd ever experienced. Caleb wasn't just attacking me anymore. He was going after Emma, using her as a pawn in his twisted game. It was the final straw. He's desperate, I said, crumpling the letter in my fist. That means we're getting close. But if he wants a fight, he's got one. Emma nodded, her fear replaced by determination. What do we do? I didn't answer right away. Instead, I pulled out my phone and called Natalie. It's time, I said when she picked up. We're going to use Project Horizon against them. The plan was risky, but it was our best shot. Over the next few days, Natalie and I worked tirelessly to prepare our case. We compiled the evidence into a comprehensive report, complete with timelines and witness statements. Emma agreed to testify, despite the risks, and we even managed to secure the cooperation of a few key employees who'd grown tired of Caleb and James's schemes. When the day of reckoning finally arrived, I felt a mix of nerves and anticipation. We held a press conference to present our findings, laying everything out for the world to see. The fallout was immediate. Caleb and James were arrested within hours, their assets frozen, and their reputations in ruins. The company's stock took a hit, but the board rallied behind me, their faith in my leadership restored. But the victory came at a cost. As I stood in the aftermath of the chaos, I couldn't shake the feeling that I'd lost something along the way. Trust, innocence, perhaps even a part of myself. Caleb and James had been defeated, but their betrayal had left scars that would never fully heal. And as I watched the sun set over the city, I realized that the game wasn't over. Not yet. Because in a world where manipulation and betrayal reign supreme, the only way to survive is to keep playing. Chapter 6, Escalating Violence. Victory in this game was never clean. It wasn't a triumphant moment where I could sit back and revel in success. The fallout of exposing Caleb and James rippled far and wide, and with it came consequences I hadn't anticipated. If the smear campaigns and underhanded tactics had been a chess match, the moves Caleb made now were pure desperation, and desperation was dangerous. The first sign came the night after the press conference. I was walking back to my apartment, exhausted but relieved, thinking that maybe, just maybe, I could catch my breath. The city's lights flickered around me as cars sped by, and for a moment, I felt a fleeting sense of peace. That feeling shattered the moment I stepped into the building's lobby. There was a man waiting there. He wasn't a tenant, that much was obvious. His broad shoulders and the menacing way he leaned against the wall sent a clear message. He was here for me. My heartbeat quickened, and I glanced at the security guard stationed at the desk. But the man didn't seem to notice anything amiss. Either he was clueless, or he'd been paid to look the other way. I forced myself to keep walking, pretending I hadn't noticed him. But as soon as I passed, I heard footsteps behind me. Slow, deliberate. My pulse raced, and every instinct screamed at me to run, but I didn't want to show fear. Not yet. Ethan Grayson, the man said, his voice gravelly and cold. I turned to face him, my jaw clenched. Who's asking? He smirked, taking a step closer. Let's just say I'm a concerned party. You've made some powerful enemies, and they don't take kindly to being humiliated. My stomach twisted. This wasn't just about Caleb and James anymore. They had allies, people willing to get their hands dirty on their behalf. And now I was in their crosshairs. Tell your bosses that if they want to come after me, they'll have to do better than sending a goon to scare me, I said, keeping my voice steady. The man's smirk widened. Oh, I'm not here to scare you, Ethan. I'm here to deliver a message. Before I could react, he swung. His fist connected with my ribs, knocking the wind out of me. I staggered back, clutching my side, but he didn't stop. Another punch landed on my jaw, sending me sprawling to the floor. Pain exploded through my body, but I forced myself to look up at him, refusing to give him the satisfaction of seeing me broken. Stay down, he growled, pulling something from his pocket. It was a photograph, folded and creased. He tossed it onto the floor beside me. Consider this a warning. With that, he turned and walked away, leaving me gasping for air on the cold marble floor. I waited until I was sure he was gone before picking up the photograph. My heart sank when I saw what it was, a picture of Emma, taken from a distance. She was leaving her house, completely unaware she was being watched. The message was clear. If I didn't back off, they'd go after her next. I didn't sleep that night. The pain in my ribs was a constant reminder of the danger I was in, but but it paled in comparison to the fear gnawing at me. Emma was already risking so much by helping me. Now she was in the crosshairs, and it was my fault. I called Natalie the next morning, my voice tight with urgency. "We need to talk," I said. "What happened?" she asked, immediately picking up on the tension. "They sent someone after me," I explained. "And they're targeting Emma. We need to move fast, or this is going to spiral out of control." Natalie swore under her breath. "I'll meet you at your office in an hour. And Ethan." "Yeah. Don't do anything stupid." Her warning stuck with me as I got ready for the day. Part of me wanted to go on the offensive, to hit back at Caleb and James with everything I had. But another part of me knew that's exactly what they wanted. If I acted impulsively, I'd play right into their hands. When Natalie arrived, she wasted no time laying out our options. "We need to put Emma somewhere safe," she said. "Someplace they can't reach her." "She won't agree to that," I said. "She's too stubborn." "Then make her agree," Natalie snapped. "This isn't a game anymore, Ethan. These people are dangerous." I nodded, knowing she was right. "What about Caleb and James? We can't just let them keep doing this." Natalie's expression hardened. "We won't. I've been digging deeper into their finances, and I think I've found something we can use." She pulled out a laptop and opened a file, showing me a series of transactions that didn't make sense. "They've been making payments to someone named Victor Ellis. He's a fixer, the kind of guy you hire when you want something unpleasant handled. Like sending someone to beat me up," I said, grimacing. "Exactly," Natalie said. "If we can link them to Ellis, we can prove they're behind the threats. It'll give us leverage to shut them down for good." The plan was risky, but it was our best shot. Over the next few days, Natalie and I worked tirelessly to gather the evidence we needed. We traced Ellis's movements, linked him to Caleb and James, and compiled a mountain of proof that painted a damning picture. But as we got closer to the truth, the danger escalated. The breaking point came one night when I was heading home. My phone buzzed with a message from Natalie. "We've got him. Meet me at the office." Relief flooded through me as I started walking faster, eager to put an end to this nightmare. But as I rounded the corner to my building, I stopped in my tracks. There, parked across the street, was a black SUV with tinted windows. The same one I'd seen outside my apartment a few nights earlier. I'd been followed. Before I could react, the SUV's doors opened, and two men stepped out. They didn't say a word, but their intent was clear. My mind raced as I weighed my options. Running wasn't an option. They'd catch me before I made it more than a few feet. Fighting was equally hopeless. So I did the only thing I could. I raised my hands, keeping my voice calm. "Whatever you're being paid, I can double it." The men exchanged a glance before one of them stepped forward. "This isn't about money, Grayson. It's about sending a message." The first punch landed hard, sending me to the ground. I tried to shield myself as they kicked and punched, each blow driving home the reality of my situation. By the time they were done, I was barely conscious, blood pooling on the pavement beneath me. But even through the haze of pain, one thought kept me going. This wasn't over. Not by a long shot. Chapter 7, The Investigator's Manipulation. Pain radiated through every inch of my body as I lay on the cold pavement, blood dripping from my split lip and pooling beneath me. My ribs felt like they were on fire, and every shallow breath came with a sting that told me at least one of them was cracked. My vision blurred as the men who'd attacked me climbed back into their SUV, their laughter trailing behind them like a sinister echo. They didn't bother to hide their faces, a clear message that they didn't think I'd have the strength or the courage to fight back. They were wrong. As I struggled to my feet, clutching my side, I couldn't help but think about how far this had gone. Caleb and James weren't just trying to ruin me financially or destroy my reputation anymore. This was personal. They'd made it clear that they were willing to use force, fear, and violence to silence me. But if they thought they could scare me into submission, they didn't know who they were dealing with. Once I managed to make it back to my apartment, I locked the door behind me and collapsed onto the couch, wincing at the pain that flared up with every movement. My phone buzzed on the coffee table, and I reached for it, my fingers trembling. It was Natalie. "Ethan," she said as soon as I answered, her voice urgent. "What the hell happened? Are you okay?" "I've been better," I admitted, my voice hoarse. "They sent some guys after me. Made it clear they're done playing games." Natalie swore under her breath. "This is escalating too quickly. We need to act now. I've got everything we need to take them down, but we can't afford to wait any longer. What did you find?" I asked, forcing myself to sit up despite the sharp protest of my ribs. "Victor Ellis," she said, "the fixer they hired. I tracked his movements over the last few weeks, and he's been meeting with Caleb and James regularly. We have enough to tie them directly to the attacks on you, not to mention the money laundering and fraud. But we need more than just evidence to bring them down. We need to outmaneuver them." I leaned back against the couch, closing my eyes as I tried to think through the pain. "How do we do that?" Natalie's tone shifted, becoming colder, more calculating. "We use their own tactics against them. Manipulation, deception, backstabbing. If they want a dirty fight, we'll give them one." Her words sent a chill down my spine, but I knew she was right. This wasn't just about justice anymore. It was about survival. The next morning, Natalie and I met at a secluded diner on the outskirts of the city. She'd brought a laptop and several folders, each one filled with damning evidence against Caleb and James. As we went over the details, she outlined her plan. "We're going to set a trap," she explained. "I've already reached out to one of Caleb's most trusted associates, someone who's been on the fence about their partnership. With a little persuasion, they've agreed to help us." "What kind of persuasion?" I asked, raising an eyebrow. Natalie smirked. "Let's just say they had skeletons in their closet that they didn't want anyone digging up. Once we have their cooperation, we'll feed Caleb and James false information, something that will make them act rashly. When they do, we'll be ready to catch them in the act." "And what happens to their fixer?" I asked, my jaw tightening at the memory of the beating I'd endured. "Victor Ellis is a loose end," Natalie said. "Once we expose Caleb and James, he'll go down with them. But if he becomes a problem before then, I'll handle it." The way she said it sent a shiver through me. Natalie wasn't just an investigator. She was a strategist, someone who knew how to play the game better than anyone I'd ever met. And for the first time, I realized just how dangerous she could be. Over the next week, we put Natalie's plan into action. The associate she'd mentioned, a nervous, middle-aged man named Eric, proved to be a valuable asset. He provided us with access to Caleb and James's schedules, private communications, and even the locations of their secret meetings. With his help, we crafted a narrative that would lure them into making a critical mistake. It started with a fake deal. Using Eric as a go-between, we planted the idea that a rival company was interested in buying out one of Caleb and James's shell companies. The offer was too good to pass up, and as expected, they took the bait. What they didn't know was that every move they made was being recorded. The day of the meeting, Natalie and I waited in a car parked a block away from the warehouse where Caleb and James were set to meet with the buyer. Inside, we'd planted hidden cameras and microphones, ensuring that every word they said would be captured. "Are you sure this is going to work?" I asked, my fingers drumming nervously on the dashboard. "It'll work," Natalie said confidently. "They're too arrogant to see the trap until it's too late." Sure enough, Caleb and James arrived right on schedule, accompanied by Victor Ellis. As they entered the warehouse, I watched the live feed on Natalie's laptop, my heart pounding in my chest. The conversation started off cordial, but it quickly escalated as they discussed the details of the deal. "This is going to set us up for life," Caleb said, his voice brimming with confidence. "Once we move the money, we're untouchable." "And what about Grayson?" Ellis asked. "He's still a problem." James waved him off. "Not for long. Once this deal is done, we'll make sure he's taken care of. Permanently." Hearing those words sent a jolt of adrenaline through me. Natalie glanced at me, her expression unreadable. "We've got them," she said, her voice steady. "It's time to make the call." I nodded, my hands trembling as I dialed the number. Within minutes, the sound of sirens filled the air, and police cars swarmed the warehouse. Caleb, James, and Ellis barely had time to react before they were arrested, their shocked faces captured by the cameras we'd planted. As I watched the scene unfold, a mixture of relief and exhaustion washed over me. It was over. The lies, the manipulation, the violence, it was finally over. But as I looked at Natalie, I couldn't help but wonder if we'd crossed a line. In our quest for justice, we'd become just as ruthless as the people we were fighting against. And in the end, I wasn't sure if that made us winners or something far worse. Chapter 8, The Final Double Cross. When the police hauled Caleb, James, and Victor Ellis out of the warehouse, I felt an overwhelming sense of relief. But it was fleeting. I'd won a battle, yes, but the war wasn't over. Not by a long shot. These weren't men who would quietly accept their fate. They were snakes, and snakes have a way of striking back when cornered. The aftermath of their arrests was chaotic. The media had a field day with the story. Corporate scandal unveiled. Business tycoons arrested for fraud and violence was plastered across headlines. Investors who had been on the fence about their loyalty to me began to call, their voices a mix of relief and concern. Caleb and James were out of the picture, but the damage they'd done lingered like a noxious cloud over the company. And then there was the matter of Victor Ellis. Natalie had been right about him. He was a loose end, and loose ends were dangerous. Despite being in police custody, Ellis refused to cooperate. He'd taken the fall for worse clients than Caleb and James and knew how to play the system. When I spoke to Natalie about it, she was as blunt as ever. "If he doesn't talk, he'll walk," she said. "And if he walks, he'll come after you." I'd expected as much, but hearing it out loud made my stomach churn. "What are our options?" I asked. Natalie leaned back in her chair, her expression unreadable. "We find something he can't weasel out of. Something that will force him to turn on Caleb and James. Otherwise, we're going to have to get creative." "Creative?" I echoed, raising an eyebrow. She shrugged. "Let's just say I have ways of making people talk." The implication hung heavy in the air. I didn't ask her to elaborate, but I couldn't shake the feeling that Natalie's definition of creative might be more extreme than I was comfortable with. Still, I couldn't afford to let my morals get in the way. Not now. As the days turned into weeks, the cracks in Caleb and James's alliance began to show. Being behind bars had a way of testing loyalties, and it didn't take long for the whispers to start. According to Natalie's sources, James was growing restless. Unlike Caleb, who thrived on manipulation and control, James was a follower. He wasn't built for the pressure of imprisonment, and it was only a matter of time before he cracked. Natalie and I decided to exploit that weakness. Using our connections, we arranged for James to receive a message while in custody. It was subtle enough to fly under the radar, but direct enough to plant a seed of doubt in his mind. The note read, "Do you think Caleb will take the fall for you? Don't be a pawn in his game. Speak now or go down with him." The message was unsigned, but its intent was clear. James was a man who thrived on reassurance, on the belief that someone else was looking out for him. The idea that Caleb might betray him was enough to make him reconsider his loyalty. 2 days later, we got the call we'd been waiting for. James wanted to talk. Sitting across from James in the sterile interrogation room was surreal. His once confident demeanor had been replaced by a nervous energy that made him look smaller, weaker. He fidgeted with his hands, avoiding eye contact as he spoke. "I didn't know things would go this far," he said, his voice barely above a whisper. "Caleb, he promised me we'd be untouchable. That we'd get away clean. And yet here we are," I said, keeping my tone even. "You're not untouchable, James." "Caleb isn't untouchable. But you have a chance to make things right. To save yourself." He looked up at me then, his eyes filled with desperation. "What do you want from me?" "The truth," I said. "All of it. Every deal, every lie, every dirty little secret. Give us Caleb, and we'll make sure the DA knows you cooperated." James hesitated, his mind clearly racing as he weighed his options. Finally, he nodded. "Okay," he said. "I'll tell you everything." The information James provided was explosive. He detailed how Caleb had orchestrated the money laundering scheme, using the company's resources to finance his personal empire. He named names, pointed to accounts we hadn't even uncovered yet, and even provided evidence linking Caleb directly to the attacks on me and Emma. But the most shocking revelation came at the very end of our conversation. "There's something else you need to know," James said, his voice trembling. "Caleb, he's been working with someone outside the company. Someone big. They've been funding his operations, protecting him. If you think taking him down will end this, you're wrong. They'll come after you, Ethan. They'll come after everyone." "Who?" I demanded, leaning forward. "Who's protecting him?" James hesitated, glancing at the door as if expecting someone to burst in at any moment. "I don't know their name," he admitted. "But Caleb called them the broker. They're powerful, connected. And they don't leave loose ends." A chill ran down my spine. The broker. The name sounded ominous, foreboding. Whoever they were clearly a force to be reckoned with. And if what James said was true, they were already watching me. After our meeting with James, Natalie and I regrouped to figure out our next move. Taking down Caleb and James was one thing, but going up against the broker? That was a different game entirely. "This changes everything," Natalie said, pacing the room. "If the broker is as powerful as James says, we're not just dealing with a corporate scandal anymore. This is organized crime. International, maybe even political. Then we'll need to be smarter, I said. We can't just rely on the legal system to protect us. We need leverage. Something we can use to keep them at bay. And what if we can't? Natalie asked, her voice uncharacteristically soft. What if they come after you after Emma? What then? I didn't have an answer. For the first time, I felt the weight of what we were up against, the enormity of the fight we'd stumbled into. Caleb and James had been monsters, but the broker? They were something far worse. And as I stared out the window at the city below, I couldn't shake the feeling that the game was far from over. If anything, it was just beginning. Chapter 9, The Silent Winner. The air in the courtroom was suffocating. Caleb sat across from me at the defendant's table, his usually smug demeanor replaced with a hollow, angry glare. His suit was impeccable, as always, but the man inside it was crumbling. James sat beside him, looking like a shadow of the person he used to be. His hands fidgeted nervously on the table, the weight of betrayal and impending doom crushing him visibly. I sat behind the prosecution's desk, not as a plaintiff or a spectator, but as the architect of this entire storm. It should have felt like victory. It should have been satisfying to watch them squirm under the weight of their crimes. And yet, as the judge read through the charges one by one, I couldn't help but feel empty. Justice wasn't as clean or gratifying as I'd once imagined. The path to get here had left me bruised, bloody, and hollow. But I wasn't done yet. Not until every piece of Caleb's empire was in ashes. The trial had been explosive. The prosecution spared no detail, dragging every skeleton out of Caleb and James's closets and laying them bare for the world to see. Fraud, embezzlement, money laundering, conspiracy to commit assault, the charges piled up like a mountain, impossible to ignore. And yet, Caleb refused to fold. He sat there, cold and composed, denying every accusation with a confidence that bordered on delusion. James, however, was a different story. He'd flipped weeks ago, trading his loyalty to Caleb for a plea deal that would save him from the worst of the fallout. His testimony was the final nail in Caleb's coffin. Watching him take the stand was like watching a man confess to his own destruction. He detailed every lie, every scheme, every calculated move they'd made to undermine me and secure their own fortunes. Caleb promised me we'd get away with it, James said, his voice trembling. He said Ethan would never figure it out. That even if he did, he wouldn't have the guts to fight back. But I was wrong. We were wrong. His words felt like a vindication, but they also left a bitter taste in my mouth. James was no innocent victim. He'd been complicit in every dirty deal, every betrayal. And now he wanted to play the remorseful accomplice, hoping to salvage whatever scraps of his life he could. It was pathetic, and yet I needed him. His testimony was the cornerstone of our case, the evidence that would seal Caleb's fate. But Caleb wasn't going down without a fight. The day Caleb took the stand, the courtroom was electric with tension. His lawyers had coached him well, and he came out swinging, spinning a web of lies and half-truths designed to paint himself as the victim. He denied everything, accusing me of fabricating evidence and orchestrating a campaign to destroy him out of jealousy. Ethan Grayson has always resented me, Caleb said, his voice calm and measured. He couldn't handle the fact that I was the face of our company, that I had the connections and the charisma to make us successful. So he set out to ruin me. I clenched my fists under the table, forcing myself to remain calm. His words were infuriating, but I couldn't let him bait me. The jury wasn't stupid. They'd seen the evidence, heard James's testimony. Caleb's theatrics wouldn't save him. And yet, there was a moment, just a fleeting second, when his gaze met mine. His eyes burned with hatred, but there was something else there, too. Fear. He knew he was losing, and it terrified him. The verdict came down 3 days later. Guilty on all counts. The room erupted in whispers and gasps as the judge handed down the sentence. 25 years in federal prison for Caleb, 10 for James. As the bailiffs led them away, Caleb shot me one last look, his lips curling into a sneer. This isn't over, he mouthed, his voice barely audible over the commotion. But it was over. For him, at least. What Caleb didn't realize was that I'd already moved on to the next phase of my plan. Taking him down was only the beginning. There was still the matter of the broker. Natalie had been working tirelessly behind the scenes, digging deeper into the shadowy figure who had been pulling Caleb's strings. The information James had given us was vague, but it was enough to get us started. Over the weeks leading up to the trial, she'd uncovered a trail of shell companies and offshore accounts that all led back to one name, Alexander Voss. He was a ghost, a man who operated behind the scenes, orchestrating deals and controlling assets from the shadows. If Caleb was a snake, Natalie told me one night as we pored over the files, Voss is a hydra. Cutting off one head won't stop him. He's got connections in places we can't even imagine. Then we'll cut off all the heads, I said, my voice cold. One by one. It was ambitious, maybe even reckless. But after everything I'd been through, I wasn't about to let the broker slip away. Caleb and James had been pawns in a much larger game, and if I wanted to truly dismantle their empire, I had to go after the king. The final confrontation came sooner than I expected. Natalie had managed to arrange a meeting with one of Voss's associates, a mid-level operative who'd been growing disillusioned with his boss's methods. The meeting was risky, but it was our best shot at getting closer to Voss. The man, a wiry figure named Grant, met us in a dimly lit bar on the outskirts of the city. He was nervous, glancing over his shoulder every few seconds as if expecting someone to burst in and drag him away. "You've got no idea what you're dealing with," he said, his voice trembling. "Voss isn't just a businessman. He's connected to people who make people disappear." "Then why are you talking to us?" I asked, leaning forward. Grant hesitated, his eyes darting between me and Natalie. "Because I'm tired of looking over my shoulder. I'm tired of being afraid. But if you're going to go after Voss, you need to be prepared. He's not going to let you get close without a fight." "We're not afraid of a fight," Natalie said, her voice steady. Grant sighed, pulling a flash drive from his pocket and sliding it across the table. "This is everything I have. Accounts, transactions, contacts. But be careful. Once you open this door, there's no going back." As I pocketed the flash drive, I felt a surge of determination. Caleb and James were behind bars, but the real battle was just beginning. Voss and his network were the true enemy, and I wouldn't stop until every last one of them was exposed. Because in the end, this wasn't just about justice. It was about survival. And if there was one thing I'd learned, it was that only the ruthless survive in a game this dirty. I was ready to play.